and welcome to The Review, your weekly preview and indeed review of the arts here on Monocle 24, coming to you from Studio One at Midori House here in London with me, Andrew Muller, and Tom Burgess Watson.
Coming up on today's programme, the London Film Festival is in full swing, so we'll be joined here in the studio by film critics Karen Krasanovich and Tim Roby, who'll be talking us through their hits and misses.
I heard it through the grapevine.
Can you make it sound blacker?
And I wonder who...
We'll also be giving you some tips on cultural happenings around the world today, focusing on South Africa and London.
Stone Free is the first solo exhibition in London of Mozambique-born artist Angela Ferreira. Named after the eponymous Jimi Hendrix single, the show is hosted in the newly opened Marlborough Contemporary Gallery space.
And we'll cross to Zurich to review the latest titles to emerge from publisher and bookstore J.R.P. Ringier.
There's a new book by a colleague of hers in the bookshop, which is published by Patrick Fry on Walter Pfeiffer. And that's a big compendium of his journals, diaries, which are kind of scrapbooks. And it's a very beautifully produced book.
So plenty to look forward to on the review right here on Monocle 24.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Studio One at Midori House. Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, Andrew. It's very nice to be working with you again.
Have you done anything cultural this week?
Well, I think my trip to England, because I'm normally based in Paris, is already a very cultural experience for me, wandering around this rather more... Well, I think London feels a little bit more cheerful than Paris at the moment. Paris feels a little bit down in the dumps at the moment. Everyone looks a bit depressed, so I'm happy to be here.
And what do they have to be depressed about in Paris?
Well, various things. I don't think the economy's in the best shape, but on a cultural note, however, things are, as usual, bubbling away in Paris. Lots of films and plays and operas and shows and things going on, so it's never boring, that's for sure. But yeah, people just look a bit miserable at the moment.
So aside from the rarely noted endemic cheerfulness of Londoners, what else have you experienced culturally?
Well, rather oddly, because I live in France, there was a film I wanted to see a long time ago in France. It came out about a year ago called The Untouchables. It's a very touching story about a paraplegic man who gets a helper to come into the house and look after him. And it's a very improbable helper in this rather sort of bourgeois household. And anyways, I went to go and see this film last night, and I was very pleased because it's long gone in France, a year ago I should think, and it's still out in the cinema here in London, so I got to benefit from sort of going back in time in a way, see something from last year. It's a wonderful film. If you get a chance to see it, I mean, there were moments where I was scarcely able to breathe. It was so funny, also very touching, really a fantastic film. So I sort of rather more original take on the sort of master-servant dynamic, a very, very good interpretation of that relationship.
I wonder how many people have gone to see it and then been really disappointed when it turns out not to be a bunch of sort of door-kicking in Chicago detectives in the 1920s. Yeah, well, there'd be people there sitting there looking at their watches waiting for the sort of the confrontation with Al Capone and his Thompson gun waving bootleggers to begin.
I think there was a film, wasn't there, with Kevin Costner of the same The Untouchables.
Exactly that.
I don't think I saw that, but yeah, I think there was definitely scope for a disappointment with them speaking that funny language that we speak across the other side of the channel as well.
Anyway, you are listening to The Review on Monocle 24. Our first guests will be with us to talk about yet more film after this.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. As a Monocle who's on name.
Welcome to Monocle 24.
Aus London, das ist Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λονδίνο, Μπρούσελ, Monocle 24.
Λόντος το Κασίν, τέμα on Monocle 24.
London Bowl, as a Monocle who's on name.
Λονδίνο, Μπρούσελ, Monocle 24.
Λονδίνο, είναι Monocle 24.
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
O que que Nina teve no ar? Monocle 24.
After I'm into Monocle 24.
Vous écoutez Monocle 24.
Das ist Monocle 24.
Du lyssnar på Monocle 24.
Kuuntelet Monocle 24.
Viestes Monocle 24.
Esto es Monocle 24.
Detta är Monocle 24.
En Monocle 24, tagat, ja.
And welcome back to The Review. Here in London, the 56th BFI London Film Festival is underway. Among the anticipated highlights of the 12-day cinematic wingding are the European premiere of Tim Burton's 3D animation Frankenweenie and the world premiere of Crossfire Hurricane, a celebration of the first half century of the existence of the Rolling Stones.
Well, we're joined here in the studio by critics Karen Kirzanovic and Tim Roby to talk us through some of the films that have got the critic crowd chattering. So a welcome to you both. And Karen, forgive my hesitation there as I tried to get your surname out in one go and failed, but I'm going to practice
That's okay.
the rest
it's
of this morning.
That's okay, it's Frankenstein.
Yes, it's a tricky one. It caught me on this. Well, it's not really that early in the morning at all, but it feels early. I don't know why. It's a Saturday. Maybe that's why. Now, lots of films for us to sort of talk through. And the first one is what looks like a rather improbable relationship between a man and an elderly man and a robot. And you've both been to see it.
This is Robot and Frank, which is one of those ones that almost... I always have this thing wherever I'm confronted with a thing that seems weird, you just think that at some point there was a meeting. And at some point there was a meeting which grown adults sat in a room and someone said, right, it's about a retired jewel thief and a robot butler. And someone else went, brilliant, let's do that.
I'm buying it. I'm buying it with your description right there.
So we have a film, it is called Robot and Frank, and it is about a retired jewel thief and a robot butler. Is it any good?
Well, gosh, I mean, I think it's really quite interesting. Did you see, just as a by the by, did you see that they've developed this robot for elderly and infirm people that looks like a puppy or a seal, and it's a robot and it calms them down. So mm-hmm. if you've seen that, there actually is real life analogies to this film, and so that makes it a little less impossible. It's not like okay. you're gonna fall in love with your vacuum cleaner. That's not what this is about. But it's Frank Langella, beautifully
cast. I think I've seen that film as well.
And they shut that cinema down with Peter Sarsgaard doing the voice of the robot.
I think Peter Sarsgaard does an incredible job as the robot. He has got quite a creepy voice. It's incredibly monotone and still, and it comes in, and their relationship, initially, Frank Langella hates the fact this robot is around. He's losing his memory. He needs help around the house, but the robot just takes charge, and he hates this. Then he realizes, actually, I can use the robot to help me pull off some more jewel robberies, you know, get back to my...
Frank Langella, of course, has form playing elderly crooks, having previously starred as Richard Nixon, but is he able to bring the same kind of gravitas to his interactions with what is fundamentally a robot butler?
He is really good in it, and it's because, I mean, he has to do the kind of... He's got Alzheimer's, you know, he's losing his mind, and he does that seamlessly within scenes. You sort of suddenly realise, hang on, he's lost track here, and the robot is there as a sort of permanent memory for him to kind of rely on. And it becomes very sad, actually, because he sort of has to make a decision that he maybe doesn't need the robot around anymore.
And do you feel any sense of emotion towards this robot by the end of the film?
I kept wanting to dust it. No. You do, because the robot isn't... I mean, even though it says it's programmed, it's going to work on this, it does make some decisions which seem... not so binary. Mm-hmm. I don't know about if you felt the same way.
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
That you know, you've got a shut-off button here somewhere, and the robot kind of doesn't say anything.
I was surprised how sad this film was, mm-hmm. and really funny as well. There's a moment where he's just when he's beginning to like the robot, he kind of says, you know, actually, you're not so bad after all. And Sarsgaard goes, thank you, Frank. It's time for your enema. It's really good.
Well, let's take a listen now to actually a trailer, an extract from... that film, Robot and Frank.
Hi, Frank.
You have got to be kidding me. That thing is going to murder me in my sleep.
Somebody's going to murder you in your sleep. Frank, you need a project. Today we're going to start a garden.
I'm not gardening.
My program's goal is to improve your health.
I would rather die eating cheeseburgers than live off steamed cauliflower.
This is Jake Finn. He's been filling me in on the plans for the new library.
So
it's his project.
You must remember the days when this library was the only way to learn about the world.
Sounds like the same people who stopped coming here want to take away what's yours.
They're going to have this fundraiser party thing on Friday, and all the young hoity-toity couples are going to come.
Sounds awful.
Yeah. Do you want to come with me?
Yes.
Cool.
It was also starring Susan Sarandon there. Another film I wanted to talk about because it is, well, largely because it's rooted in my neck of the woods, my original neck of the woods anyway, is the Sapphires. And because it's musical and kind of upbeat, I'm assuming the trailer is musical and kind of upbeat. So we'll start with the trailer from the Sapphires, if we can.
What's his problem?
It's because we're black, stupid.
No, it's because you're ugly.
Hey! Get out of my life, you horrible little gobshites!
Well, today I started loving
you. That wasn't terrible. Do you sing anything other than that country and western shite?
Sorry, what's going with country and western, mate?
Oh, it's just wrong.
Well, what do you think we should sing?
One, two, three!
Okay, wrong hands, girls. Wrong hands. Ooh,
I bet you. If you want to perform for the brothers in Vietnam, you gotta give them soul.
You gotta manage them, are ya?
And mold them. And shape them.
You got it within you. You just need to let it out. Oh, mercy! Oh! Can I have some mercy now? Any questions?
I heard it through the grapevine.
Can you make it sound blacker?
And I wonder who's left.
And your name again?
We're the Sapphires.
We'll see you in Saigon.
This is a trailer from The Sapphires, a film vaguely based on a true story about an Australian Aboriginal singing group who go and play for the US troops in Vietnam, starring Chris O'Dowd as their Irish manager. Is this basically The Commitments relocated to another hemisphere in another decade?
Yeah, no horses. I suppose in a way. I mean, it's the classic girls impoverished, singing personal problems, drunken manager, oh, hello, look, we can perform. We're big stars. And it's diamonds in the rough, really, is really what it is. But, Chris O'Dowd is terrific in it. And I think the story, and you made me smile when you were saying it's loosely based on the real thing. I mean, it's a terrific real story. Mm. It really is that these girls suddenly end up, you know, from singing on a little buckboard somewhere, end up entertaining the troops. And the music in it is terrific. But unfortunately, it goes a little bit more glee than it does, you know, real. When somebody really sings next to you, somebody who can really sing in real life, it's amazing. But when suddenly it's a record coming out of their mouth, it's kind of slightly less impressive.
Does it sort of have any pretensions to social commentary at all beneath the comedy, either about the Vietnam War or about Aboriginal Australia?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there's a little bit of discussion that African Americans are in Vietnam fighting, where at home the race riots are going on. There is that. There's also one of the girls, and I believe it's Deborah Mailman character, is actually a racist herself, where she accuses her cousin of passing for white, and there is a strand running through that.
I should say, I'm seeing it tomorrow morning, and I'm really up for Chris O'Dowd in it. Mm. I mean, I thought around the time of The Boat That Rocked, things didn't look great. then he was so good in Bridesmaids, and now suddenly it feels like we're ready for Chris O'Dowd to, you know, to take command as a leading man. And it sounds like he's hilarious.
No, he's terrific. And actually, you forget, he really looks great, and he really, really presents himself well on camera. I'd forgotten The Boat That Rocks. What a terrible film that was.
But they really can sing, these girls, can't they? They've got beautiful voices. Is it the sort of film you might want to go out and get a soundtrack for, or you look rather frustrated
by
that comment?
I just wonder what they really sound like. That's what I'm concerned about. Some of the vocals are astonishing. I mean, Whitney Houston, astonishing. If I can throw back there, but
you think they had a bit of help, you think?
I think there was a lot of help.
Okay.
But in a way, you had to. I remember sitting there looking at these girls, and they're all, you know, they don't look like the Supremes. You know, they're kind of just stocky girls in sparkly dresses. Good. They can sing. But you're listening to them and you kind of can't help but get emotional.
It's going to take me a while to forgive the film, that crack about country music early on, I have to say.
You will forgive them.
But also, I guess that, you know, it's not easy to construct a thematic link between the Sapphires and Great Expectations, but I think I've got one. Whereas where the Sapphires was actually, you know, filmed or partially set in my homeland, Great Expectations was a novel I studied while at school in my homeland and for which I conceived an absolutely murderous loathing, especially for Pip, who I just think is just the wettest character in English literature.
I really doubt, seriously,
plenty more fish in the sea, kid. Walk on.
Can I just say, I really doubt this film is going to convert you to Great Expectations. I seriously doubt it. It's just another Great Expectations. That's what it is. We've seen it so many times. It starts the same way that the David Lean version starts. It's kind of carbon copy, except that Mike Newell's directed it and he's got all his mates on board from Harry Potter.
It looks very Harry Potter.
Instead of Jaggers, we have basically Hagrid. You know, Robbie Coltrane comes in, and Ralph Fiennes is doing a sort of Magwitch via Voldemort routine.
He acts with spit.
Yeah, it's not great, I have to say.
Is it as dull and annoying as the book?
Well, you know, I gave my father the book, and the only thing he said to me was, do you know there's a paragraph here that has over 200 words in it? A sentence. Like, Dad, okay, just don't read it, okay? Is it dull? It's, yes. I mean, the problem is, and I like Mike Newell as a person. I think he's a really, really terrific person and a talented director. But I think you shouldn't remake something that's already done, that's already a good film. Only remake poor films. Don't remake good films. And I think he stepped right in it. Whereas it's actually a perfectly good BBC TV version.
It is, but there's just been one of those. Or was it ITV? Yeah. You know, there was one with Gillian Anderson and Ray Winston just like a year ago, Christmas telly. And Ray Winston's just so much better cast as Magwitch than Ralph Fiennes will ever be.
Although, know? I have to say, in this, Jason Fleming.
Yeah, he was really good.
He was really good in this, and I've never been a fan, but I am now.
And much as you hate Pip, actually, Jeremy Irvine is very well cast as Pip, because he is a kind of naive, and he's just all the emotions are there on the surface.
And Miss Havisham burns real good.
Oh, she burns, and then she kind of does this terrible death scene.
Let's manage everybody's expectations by taking a listen to an extract from the film. Here's the trailer.
It is the desire of the benefactor that he be brought up as a gentleman in London.
What do you think?
There are conditions, of course. The first is that the name of the benefactor remain secret. The second thing that you always retain the name...
Pip. You must know, Pip, I have no heart.
I don't believe it.
I've been made that way.
Who are you?
You acted. No, and I've never forgot it.
I cannot renew our acquaintance. My life has changed since then.
I'm to be sent to London to go on show.
If she wounds you, lover, if she favours you, lover, she tears your heart to pieces. Lover, lover, lover.
The girl's brought up by Miss Havisham to wreak revenge on all the male sex.
Was that kind?
Who am I to be kind?
How can you give your affections to that man? The looks and smiles you never give to me!
Do you want me to deceive you?
But you deceive him?
Yes! All men but you.
Great expectations there. I mean, I don't know how great my expectations are after that discussion. Perhaps I'm pretty low. Pretty low. I think that seems to be the resounding consensus.
It's not terrible, it's just mediocre. Mm.
And is it one of those things where really you were talking there about the folly of remaking films for which there's already a definitive version? It always strikes me as those people who sort of listen to some classic rock song and then decide, yeah, I can add something to that. There's things that, you know, they haven't quite brought to it that maybe I... You know, there's incredible hubris there. Do you think it was just doomed to failure for that reason?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, I think Mike Newell is a very good filmmaker. I don't know his reasons for remaking this. I mean, I suppose making a classic, that's always going to be around. So, but thing is, a cover version can only waste 3 minutes of your time.
All right, well, let's just have a quick break here. You're listening to The Review. We're talking about the London Film Festival with critics Karen Kritsanovich and Tim Robey. We'll be back with more discussion after this short break. Stay tuned.
The November issue of Monocle takes the pulse of the world as we investigate how good healthcare makes a nation. We reveal who has the best nurses, meet a mayor who put his city on a diet, and visit a hospital the size of a city. And there's lots more to make you feel better about the world too.
In the business section, we find out about the healthy Japanese tipple that represents a $1.2 billion industry. We take to the skies with the CEO of Australia's Royal Flying Doctor Service, and our Washington correspondent profiles the small businesses making a healthy profit on a US presidential campaign trail.
In the affairs section, we go on the road with an elderly band of diplomats. I sit down with Malaysia's Mr. Fixit, and we also present our 10-point plan for the next US president, whoever that may be.
In the design section, we tackle grey matters, looking at three pioneering projects designed for the elderly around the world. We also create our own perfect community in which to grow old. Elsewhere, we drop in on a beautiful new cancer treatment centre by Nord Architects in Copenhagen that's more like a home than a hospital.
The November issue of Monocle also includes a special expo that limbers up with Japanese companies as they bend knees and reach for better profits with the aid of morning exercise routines. It's all on newsstands now and also available via subscription at monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
And this is The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Burgess-Watson, and Andrew Muller. And we're here in the studio with Karen Kritsanovich and Tim Roby. And we're talking about all the films turning heads at the 56th London Film Festival, which is taking place right now. So we've talked through a couple of the films. One of the films that everyone where I live in France is getting very excited about, and they were getting very excited in the run-up to Cannes as well, was Rust and Bone, which I gather you two don't necessarily see eye to eye.
Yeah, I think we differ on this one. So you have to, in my mind, you have to go with it. Bear with this. The story is Marion Cotillard plays a killer whale trainer.
I've no problems with this
park.
So far.
This is fine. Yeah. She is crippled in a hideous killer whale accident.
Oh dear. Okay.
And then she finds this guy to help her out, who becomes kind of her fuck buddy, if I'm allowed to say that. And that is the story. And basically, it's the story of their relationship as it continues. He is a boxer. He's like fallen on hard times, but he's making a comeback. It sounds hideous. I was kind of bowled over by it. I think she is amazing. And the guy who plays her lover, is Matthias Schoenaerts, who's this Belgian actor, is fantastic in it. It's the guy who directed A Prophet, the prison movie, which was my favourite film of that year.
Film.
Jacques Audiard, great French filmmaker. And I think against the odds of this kind of ridiculous melodramatic story, I think he pulls off an extremely powerful love story. But Karen doesn't think so.
See, I'm not a grown-up. So, no, Marion Cotillard gets involved with some 3D post-production on her limbs. No, sorry.
There is a bit of that, yeah.
Her legs
They didn't
gone.
Actually cut her legs off for the role. That was their mistake.
You could tell that they didn't, because you could see that. No, actually, emotionally, I think the film works very well, but I just wasn't really won over by this sort of, it was sort of the heavy guy with, you know, the heavy emotional problems. He's got the son.
He's quite violent as well, isn't
it's,
he?
It's very violent, and how he starts, he starts making money by doing these really horrible fights, sort of off in some sort of strange council estate or something weird like that. And emotionally, I mean, it is, we were saying in the green room earlier that it is a melodrama, beautifully acted, but it was a story that I didn't find terribly compelling. It's this beautiful woman who has no legs, who falls in love with a guy that has a lot of tattoos and a troubled relationship with his son, the end.
It takes some pretty big risks, though. There's a Katy Perry song in the middle of it, which she remembers from her, which is the sort of anthem when she's in her happy mode with the killer whales, and it comes back, and there she is, crippled, and Katy Perry's firework comes
should
on.
Should we let our listeners make
decide.
Up their own mind to a certain extent on this one, to the best of their abilities, anyway, with the next trailer, which is Rust and Bone.
Moi, j'étais très. J'aimais bien qu'on me regarde. J'aimais bien sentir que je séduisais. J'aimais bien sentir que je les excitais. Mais après, ça m'ennuyait, en fait.
Thank you.
Yeah, Marion Cotillard as a killer whale trainer, I'd be happy to watch 2 hours of. I'm not necessarily sure about the rest of it. Tim, there was another film I know you wanted to talk about, Amour.
Amour is another biggie because it's Michael Haneke, and it's the movie that won him his second Palme d'Or in Cannes this year. It stars Jean-Louis Trintignant and Emmanuel Riva, who are two of the great veterans of French cinema, both in, I think, their 80s, playing a long-married couple who have to deal with her decline. Her health becomes a terrible problem. She is paralyzed and begins to kind of deteriorate, and okay, he has to decide what to do.
Not sensing a great date movie.
Yeah, here. You know, maybe not a movie to go along expecting too many musical numbers, but it's tremendous. I mean, they're both amazing, particularly her. I think because it's Haneke, it's done in a very kind of clinical way, and you're often just watching them kind of potter around their flat, which sounds like it would be dull. It's actually sort of mesmerizing. It's incredibly well-crafted. I think she'll get an Oscar nomination. I think he is also tremendous. Isabelle Huppert plays their daughter and comes along and tries to intervene and sort of suggest what else could be done. But it's all a question of, like, how much pain is she going to be able to tolerate? I mean, we're talking Bergman territory here. It's like, it's a bleak film. It's hard work. It's also one of the best films of the year.
I mean, is it entirely mournful? Are there any sort of moments of reprieve at all?
There are, because she comes in and out of lucidity, and even as it continues, he has moments where he is able to connect with her, and kind of they're able to remember their lives. This is just depressing me talking about this, but it is amazingly good. I really can't recommend it highly enough, and I think Karen will love it when she gets around to seeing it.
Because I'm just getting over the flu, and I didn't want to see anything that was too emotionally taxing because I figured I'd just combust.
Yeah,
I can relate to that. Yeah.
So yeah, what is the one reason for going to this is not just the performances, but there is emotional resonance here that eternal. There's an eternal message.
The friend who I happened to be sitting next to at the screening was in floods for pretty much the whole film.
Waterproof mascara.
It's that kind of film.
Brace yourselves. Karen Krasanovich and Tim Robey, thank you both very much for joining us here on The Review.
It's time now for our weekly look ahead at some cultural happenings in our favourite cities around the world. Here's Monocle's associate editor Nelly Gacheva to talk us through it.
With Frieze Art Fair on the way here in London, there are some great happenings in the art world this weekend. Here are a couple to check out. Located in the heart of London's Mayfair, David Zwijner's first European gallery has just opened with an exhibition featuring works by Belgium artist Luc Toymans. Representing the artist's first solo show in London since his retrospective at the Tate Modern in 2004, the show comprises a series of paintings inspired by already existing photos and video stills, including references to the 1942 film adaptation of Somerset Maugham's The Moon and Sixpence. The exhibition is at David Zwijner Gallery until the 15th of November. Staying in the capital, Stone Free is the first solo exhibition in London of Mozambique-born artist Angela Ferreira. Named after the eponymous Jimi Hendrix single, the show is hosted in the newly opened Marlborough Contemporary Gallery space. Stone Free features an interdisciplinary body of work, including sculpture and photography, and it centers around Cullinan Diamond Mine in South Africa. It is on until the 17th of November. Heading east, Tokyo Toko Cinemas chain is relaunching its popular 10 a.m. film festival that started in 2010 with screenings of a series of classic films, including Belle du Jour, Taxi Driver, and Edward Scissorhands, to name a few. This year's third edition will be hosted by the smaller Miyukiza Theatre in Shibuya, and all films will be screened all day long and not just at 10 a.m. Showing this weekend is the 1960s Western, The Magnificent Seven. Visit the official website for full list of screenings. In Istanbul, Doku, the Turkish rock company founded by Mehmet Gureli in 1989, presents Notations, an exhibition featuring contemporary weaving techniques of the traditional Turkish rock, the kilim. One-of-a-kind handmade kilims will be on display, such as Ayşe Birşel's Honeycomb, which gives a modern twist to the classical blue and red-colored Anatolian kilim. Notations is on display until the 20th of December. And finally, in Australia, Sydney's iconic opera house welcomes the controversial Richard Strauss opera Salome. Banned in New York and London in the early 20th century, Salome is now being revamped by director Gail Edwards and production designers Brian Thompson and Julie Lynch. Expect a colorful, bold, and at times shocking performance. Visit sydneyoperahouse.com for details. For Monocle, I'm Nelly Gocheva.
You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Saturday. You're listening to The Review with me, Tom Burgess-Watson, and Andrew Muller. Now, we heard a little earlier on from Nelly about the cultural happenings in various cities around the world, and now we're going to put the spotlight firmly on Cape Town.
And here's our Alex Duval-Smith in Cape Town to tell us what to look forward to over the next few days.
Cape Town just will not stop reminding us that it's been elected World Design Capital in 2014. Already, almost every event bills itself as a build-up to Designer Year. The fifth Cape Town month of photography is pulling everyone to Woodstock, a poor area that's stubbornly hanging on to its post-industrial air of decay, despite the best efforts of art galleries, organic markets, and shops selling painted-over antique furniture. The Lovell Gallery in Albert Road stands between a battery wholesaler and a Nigerian car body shop. From Saturday until the end of the month, it's presenting One Day in Woodstock. 30 prints of the neighbourhood, all taken on the 24th of September by local and international photographers. Among them is Germany's Gregor Rohrig and French abstract photographer Zina. If you're interested in a Southern Hemisphere perspective on urbanism, Tuesday offers a chance to eavesdrop on the last of four weekly presentations by the Cape Institute for Architecture. Robert Silk of Lewis Carroll Architects will be talking about the Zambian capital, Lusaka, which, if you know it, looks like it was built in the 1950s by European architects using leftover materials from their own post-war monstrosities. That's on Tuesday at the Free World Design Centre on the Fan Walk at 5 p.m. You'll only be a stone's throw from the Victoria and Alfred Waterfront shopping complex. This is where to catch Kunj Animation. Taking its name from Kunjani, which means hello in Zulu, it's the second ever South African Festival of Animation. Its screenings, talks and networking meetings are all about establishing animation alongside the Cape's existing and growing film industry. Guest of honour is French DreamWorks animator Alexandre Ebouillon. Which leads us nicely to Thursday, where the 7 p.m. screening at the waterfront of the American movie Vito marks the start of the latest edition of the Out in Africa Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Directed by Jeffrey Schwartz, the documentary is about the late Vito Russo. He was the activist who in the 1980s wrote The Celluloid Closet, a book that exposed how Hollywood's tragic treatment of gays and lesbians shaped the image of homosexuality in the Western psyche. The Out in Africa Festival runs at the new Metro Cinema at the waterfront from Thursday until Sunday the 28th of October. For Monocle in Cape Town, I'm Alex Duval-Smith.
And you are listening to The Review here on Monocle 24.
And to end today's show, we're talking books, and we're off to Zurich. J.R.P. Ringier can be found in the Löwenbräu Art Complex in Zurich, which opened its doors just recently. It's a leading art publishing company which also runs the bookshop Kunstgriff, located downstairs in the same building.
It's the biggest contemporary art shop in Switzerland, and besides the newest books on the scene, it also has a strong focus on reference monographs that can't be found anywhere else. Well, we popped in to talk to the director, Lionel Bouvier, to find out about what new titles they have on offer.
A I'm Lionel Bovier, director of Thierry Péringuet Book Company that was created in 2004, dedicated to contemporary art. We are based in Zurich, Switzerland, and have an office in Paris since a couple of years. Publish about 60 new titles a year, mostly in English language, but as well in German and French, with some occasional adventures in other languages. We are now in a new relocation of the company within the Löwenbräu Kunst Complex, this art hub. And it now has enlarged itself to a really larger bookshop, 100 meters square, entirely dedicated to contemporary art with different sections. I mean, we can see how it's organized here, that there are photography, design. And what is particular to this shop is the interest into having a stock on monograph by artists, as well as specific features such as artist books, where we just have a large display that we do in collaboration with other sellers like Kunstkiosk, where we have like what the German call modern antiquariat, which is this second-hand books in perfect condition that are being collected through the years and remain interesting as source material, as artist books, or as sold-out volumes that you can find somewhere else. And the shop has a large inventory, intends to have many events, starting with next week, where we start to have like book launches again. We clearly benefit here from the public that comes to Löwenbräu in general. We tend to have a lot of artists that come here, which I always think is a good sign. The bookshop has always been part of the experience of visiting exhibitions. So the biggest section of the bookshop is artist monographs. There's a tendency today to go to the novelties, to only have like the recent one and to ship back the old ones. And we would like to do the opposite. I mean, when we think there's a really good monograph, we would like to stock it for as long as it's on print. Next to that, there's these rare book sections where we're trying to build a stock with other sellers, not only coming from us, but from different people who are specialized in that discipline. And that means we can also research for customers if they look for a particular book. The back wall is dedicated to artist editions, artworks in general. These are all artist editions that we produced with Thierry Péringuet. There's a large table with what is considered like the novelties. It's all of course always connected to the actuality of the art event. So you will find the Frieze catalog, for instance, right now because it's Frieze. There's a Siri section, DVD section. There's a large photography choice. And let's say a particular feature is that there's this central system of organization of what the house is publishing. So that means the Kunsthalle, the Migros Museum, Hausen, Via Bob van Orso, etc. People who are working within this building, who are providing exhibitions within this building, we have a special presentation for what they do, because that's one of the key interests, of course, of the audience that enters the bookshop. The usual magazine section and postcards, etc. Okay, so among our recent release, we just received the David Noonan monograph, which is part of a series of reference monographs, and is an Australian artist living in London, and that was also the cover of a little journal that we're doing to promote and inform our readership, audience, about new releases. And that's both like a classic monograph and with a twist, in the sense that the design was done together with the artist, so there's a lot of play on the source images, etc. To take another example, there's a new book by a colleague of her in the bookshop, which is published by Patrick Frey on Walter Pfeiffer, a Swiss photographer that lives in Zurich, that we also published a book some years ago. And that's a big compendium of his journals, diaries, which are kind of scrapbooks. And it's a very beautifully produced book. We're very happy to see it here in the bookshop. And then the third one I could show you is this Land Art catalog exhibition that was coming from the MoCA in LA. I mean, we do stock as well exhibition catalogs when we think they're very important, major research material, and that was the case for this show, which was the first to survey land art, an important art movement that didn't have really a museum history until then. And that proves to be an interesting service for the customers. They don't have to import that from the US, but they find it here at about the same price than they could find it in New York. You also can find in the series section one book that we were particularly happy with, as it's what you could call a bestseller in art, by Hans-Ulrich Obrist, originally Swiss person that lives in London. He's a chief curator at the Serpentine Gallery in London. his book, A Brief History of Curating, has proven to be like really a very successful title for us that we keep on reprinting. So that I think the fifth reprint now. There's been several other languages edition. We sold some rights that we are not used to sell normally for our books, like Russian or Korean. And that's a book that has proven to find its audience among young professionals, students, people that are interested in this curatorial history. That's also the first book we have released as an e-book, which is one of the key concern and problems of the publisher at this time, is what do you do? Do you follow this trend to transmit information on a digital way? We tended to trust trade partners to transform it into ebook in the different versions for the different readers, but we didn't solve the subject on, let's say, illustrated books. We have still not a clear plan of what path we should follow or not in that respect. And then I think is something that every publisher is at the moment considering, pondering on, and wondering, you know, which way to go. A specialty as well in this shop, there's a little TV to watch a couple of DVDs. I mean, it might sound a bit antiquated to what I've said. It's for sure one day the version that you will find on the web will be the only version, but at the moment, DVDs are still an interesting way to transmit this information. And we have released recently a series of documentaries filmed by Jeff Connolly, who was working for the Belgium TV in the 1960s and 70s. So on the table with the novelties, you'll find, for instance, quite a lot of titles on Mike Kelly at the moment, as there's a retrospective of this artist that will start in the Stedelijk in Amsterdam. It was quite an unfortunate story that the artist has recently committed suicide. But nevertheless, the retrospective that he was planning for years is happening. And of course, there's a great interest in the art audience to see this last show, to understand maybe something from that show in relationship to his own life. And so we have on this table different books on Mike Kelly, some we produced as publishers, some that the Gagosian Gallery just produced with Rizzoli, etc. And we will try in the rare book section to also bring out some out-of-print titles of him. So let's say someone who would be, like myself, a fan of his work could actually gather in the different section like a complete little library on Mike Kelly. Writings, monographs, specific project, artist book, etc. And I think that's part also what a bookshop could try to do, try to offer this kind of, let's say, not only the new book that has come out or the most famous one, but like, you know, a whole range of offers.
And that was Lionel Bovier, director of JRP Ringier Books, talking to Monocle's Manon Spindler in Zurich. And that brings us to the end of this edition of the Saturday Review. So it's goodbye from all of us here at Midori House. The show was produced by Katie Bilboa and Dawn Trump and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Today's studio manager was Alex Funnell.
Well, if you like what you've heard on the review, why not tune in to Culture with Robert Bound? Here's what's coming up on Monday's show, which is a special first birthday edition.
It's a special one for us, so we've got some pretty special events decided to share with you too. First up, we'll pick the best bits and a bit more from our live broadcast at the inaugural Frieze Masters and the opening day of the Frieze London Art Fairs. We'll hear what's been causing waves at the Busan Film Festival, and we'll split ourselves stateside and lakeside, attending a couple of cool events in New York and Chicago.
That's Culture with Robert Bound, which will be on air at 1900 London time on Monday.
Up next is Georgina with the weekend edition, but for now, from me, Andrew Muller, and Tom Burgess-Watson, it's goodbye.